Welcome to She Talks Tech, the brand new podcast from We Are Tech Women.
Because we've seen a rise in these more catastrophic attacks like that of TravelX, there has been a residual outcome being that a lot of leaders don't feel confident in their ability to recover businesses.
I'm Vanessa Vallelio-Bee, founder of We Are the City and We Are Tech Women. As an individual that's been a technologist both in the corporate space and as an entrepreneur, I know how tough it can be to rise to the top of our profession. Women in tech make up just 17% of the industry in the UK, and those stats do not improve even if you look overseas. At We Are Tech Women, we want you to rise to the top of the industry. We want you to sit into senior positions and be key decision makers. The She Talks Tech podcast will bring you stories, lessons and tips from some of the most inspirational women and men in the industry. It is so important to give back and build a world where everyone can thrive. It is also imperative that as technologists, we do whatever we can to arm the next generation with the skills they need. In particular, those who do not necessarily have access to networks or the support they need to thrive in their future careers. Today we hear from Jim Shook and Elizabeth Green, both cybersecurity experts at Dell Technologies. They'll be discussing how to build cyber resilience to help protect you and your business. Join Jim and Elizabeth as they share real-world examples of how businesses have developed their cyber resilience skills.
So I'm the cybersecurity and resilience specialist with Jim. We help organizations to build resilience. In particular, we help them to develop strategies to respond and recover from catastrophic cyber attacks, like nation-state attacks and insider threats. So we're really excited to share with you a few things today. The first being, what do we mean by cyber threat? And what can we make from some of the more recent attacks that we've seen that have happened to large organizations? The second is why. You know, why are organizations so focused on building resilience? And last but not least, how? How can we apply cyber resilience to our businesses today? And how are other organizations and industries really using this as an opportunity to collaborate and innovate? And I know the theme today is to be innovative and lead. And so hopefully these will allow you to take some steps forward to disrupt, innovate, and lead within your organizations. So to get started, let's talk a little bit about what we're seeing in the industry. Over the last 10 years, we've seen almost all sectors and all organizations focus on one thing, and that has been digital transformation. And that's not just so that they can get a better experience for their customers by creating applications and digital platforms, but it's also for them to be operationally efficient, to be able to manage things remotely and virtually in a way that we never have seen before. But with this new opportunity, there has been a huge risk. And that risk is really, how do we protect our data? How do we protect our intellectual property and our operations and do this virtually? In addition, how do we defend against the newest threat, that is cyber threat? And some data that we've seen is by the year 2021, cyber crime is expected to be a $6 trillion industry. You know, that is actually more profitable than the illegal drug trade. And so we're seeing large organizations that we know and love be hit by cyber attacks. And so Jim and I were keen to talk about two in particular that have happened over the last 5 months, EasyJet and TravelX. So EasyJet, many of you have probably flown an EasyJet flight back when we were all traveling. And that's a large, you know, British airline, and they were hit with a data breach back in May. A data breach at its simplest form is just theft of data. And in this case, it was 9 million email addresses and several thousand credit card details that were stolen. And you know, while data theft is never good and we don't ever want that to happen to our business, in this case, they were quite lucky. None of that data was encrypted or deleted or tampered with. And when that does happen, things can be quite different from a recovery and a cost perspective. Jim, do you want to talk a bit about TravelX?
Yeah, so people probably know TravelX, their currency exchange company. If you travel, especially internationally, you're likely to see their stands in the airport. And they were hit by a ransomware attack a couple months ago. So a ransomware attack, the bad actors get into your network. They typically will encrypt your data so you can't use it. So think about your organization. If you had no access to any of your systems, or at least your key systems, and then they frequently delete your backups so that you don't have a chance to recover. In this case, that's what apparently happened to TravelX. The bad actors asked for $5 million for the keys to decrypt the data. And it looks like, according to news accounts, TravelX, they were down for several weeks. I mean, it was in the news, very public, because the counters were closed. They just didn't have access to their data to run their business. And it looks like they eventually paid somewhere around $2.3 million to get that data back and get it decrypted. So all in all, kind of down for close to a month, and they've really suffered a lot since that point. And Liz, as you suggested, such a difference here in the types of attacks. One, somebody stealing data, which is never good, but often you don't even know it, or you don't know till later, versus someone encrypting or deleting your data, which you know pretty much immediately because of the impact, and very, very different in the impacts and then how we kind of protect against those threats.
Absolutely, Jim, and thank you for sharing. I think because we've seen a rise in these more catastrophic attacks like that of TravelX, there has been a residual outcome being that a lot of leaders don't feel confident in their ability to recover businesses. We actually did a study this year that found almost 2/3 of all IT leaders not being confident in their ability to recover critical data sets. And that's really not a great place for any business leader to be. I think that's why the bulk of our work has been on building resilience for organizations. Because on the right, you see an image from Norsk Hydro. That was a large aluminum manufacturer that was hit with a form of ransomware. It was called Locker Gaga, which encrypted everything. Kind of sounds similar to the encryption used for TravelX. And in this case, all of their supply chain and operations came to a standstill. And it looks like it was around $71 million in damages. But again, you know, it's a really hard number to measure. And, you know, that's just not a good number or a good situation. Not a great place for organizations to be.
I think, too, that, Liz, what jumps out to me here, we see numbers and statistics almost too frequently now. So just take a pause and think about this, that over 2/3 of these organizations said they wouldn't be able to reliably recover. We're dealing with types of attacks now that have been really largely around for about 5 years. If you think about that, we're 2/3 not able to recover from known types of attacks. So organizations that aren't acting in this area are really at risk. Maybe they haven't been attacked, but everybody's a target because that's how the criminals work. It's something where people really need to focus some of their attention, or else they're leaving the door wide open and they're leaving themselves open to huge risk.
Absolutely. And I think because there is, you know, so many organizations feeling this today, we are seeing a rise in focus on resilience. So much so that's become a buzzword in the industry. And I wanted to take a minute just to quickly define what we mean by resilience. So resilience is the ability to recover from or adjust easily to adversity or change. Now, typically, organizations we work with don't want to focus on building resilience, but they know that they have to focus on building resilience. What they would like to focus on are what I call the sexy technologies. So blockchain, AI, big data analytics. Those are the things that are going to drive revenue and profits and growth, and really help organizations innovate and do things differently. But at the same time, there's quite an intense regulatory environment which says, as we take risks, we need to make sure our data is available and we can maintain the integrity of that data. Now, those are quite competing ideologies. Let's take risks, but no matter what, make sure that we can recover. And the only way to do both is to build resilience. And that's why we see business resilience so tightly connected to cyber resilience. And I think that's even more the case today with more and more organizations moving to work from home models. So we're seeing that there's greater risk exposure today than ever before. And there are four key drivers of this, many more, I'm sure. The first is there are more people working from home, and home networks are really difficult to secure in the same way as corporate networks. There's a lot of reasons for that. One of my favorite is that there's a lot of IoT devices at home. So we have our Amazon Alexas and our smart TVs, and a lot of those IoT devices weren't necessarily built with the same security principles as, you know, a corporate laptop may have. And so that presents risk because we're all sharing from the same network and resources. That's putting a lot of burden on businesses to build that security at the end point and make sure that they're stopping any threats from happening right at the home network. The second is there's an increased volume in threats. So the cyber criminals see this as an opportunity, and we saw the statistic I already mentioned to you. They can make some serious money here, and there's more people using their computers now than ever before. So, you know, they're quite sophisticated in their approach to phishing attacks and malware and clickbait. The third is that business continuity plans haven't necessarily been updated, especially over the last few months. And in some organizations, they've moved from, you know, a couple thousand people working from home to hundreds of thousands. And that does change the risk tolerance, and the business continuity plans need to evolve with that as well. And then the fourth is that you might have a bad actor in the network and not even know. So delays in detection happen all the time. And for these reasons, I think organizations acknowledge that there is a risk, and the resilience needs to be a focus today more than ever before. Jim, is there anything that you see here in particular that stands out when you have discussions with our clients today?
Yeah, certainly the work from home, the changes that we had almost overnight were a huge challenge. So you think about a handful of people working from home, 5%, 10% or remotely, overnight to 95%, sometimes more, of the workforce. And that's a huge change that would be hard to deal with just on an operational standpoint, let alone when you think about the security risks. And the other piece I wanted to mention, Liz, kind of ties into this. The criminals are really smart. And, you know, we have our conferences where disruption and innovation and things like that, they're living it. They're very smart. They make a lot of money doing this, and they keep growing in their sophistication. So it's hard for us to keep up, particularly when we have things that we're working with that we haven't really fixed yet. But just keep that in mind as we move forward. Just keep working at these things and consider these risks and start to cover them better.
Absolutely. And that's really great insight there, Jim. And I think we've sufficiently probably scared the audience, and that's not our goal, right? You know, this is all very manageable. And I think one thing we are keen to do is impart as much wisdom as possible onto this audience today so that you can go back and actually make change and lead within your business and really innovate around how we build resilience. So we have five things we've learned in this process of working with businesses to help them build resilience. I think before getting into that, it's important to note there is no single solution or technology you can buy that will make this problem go away. And that's hard, right? You know, I'd love it if there was just one solution you could pay for that would solve all your problems. But this is a business change, right? You have to look at people, you have to look at the process, the technology, and then the larger ecosystem. There has to be resilience across all of those to truly be a resilient business. But some of the things you can start to do in number one is really to build strong executive level awareness. A lot of these initiatives require the entire business to come together and really deliver this outcome and this solution. That takes someone who can pull, you know, IT, legal, operations all in a room and help them, you know, to actually devise what the right approach will look like for the business. Without a strong executive supporting this and kind of communicating with the board on what needs to be done in order to reduce risk, it's going to be really difficult to make meaningful change. Jim, I know you spend a lot of time working with executives. It would be good to know, you know, your thoughts on how a strong executive can really benefit in a resilient plan.
You hit on the high points, Liz. It's important because you do have these disparate groups. Budget can become an issue. Changes in culture can be concerning too. And so having that support is critically important to getting these projects off the ground. So for people on our call here, if you are an executive, sit down with your IT teams and really kind of understand a little bit deeper level challenges and risks that they're facing. And if you're not an executive and you're thinking executives are not concerned about this, don't punt. Go to work. It's a great opportunity to make those relationships with the executives, help them understand some areas that maybe they need some help in, and that's going to benefit the organization as a whole.
Really sound advice, Jim. Thank you. And I think that really actually leads us well into being more agile in general and having a more agile approach to risk management. And so we want to be in an organization where if we move from 10,000 laptops to 100,000 laptops deployed, or, you know, remote working for one part of the business to the whole business, we can adapt quickly, we can assess the risk quickly, and we can really change how we secure the business. And I think that's something that's really new for businesses. They're just kind of taking that leap, but it's something we recommend doing sooner rather than later. So looking at risk from an agile lens, We also want to make sure we're protecting all of our assets. And what we mean by assets is looking at the processes that any business needs to have available at all times, tying that back to different applications and data that need to be highly available and resilient. And you know, we do a lot of work in helping organizations with protecting assets, but first is making sure you're looking at how they're being protected today, backing them up, getting them off site, isolating them off the network. Those are some of the things that we do with businesses to help them protect their crown jewels. The last or the fourth is aligning processes. So we want to make sure that IT doesn't have a completely different process than operations. Operations a completely different process than legal. Because in the event that something goes wrong, then we have a ton of different disparate pieces of the business trying to work together, and it just doesn't work. It's slow, it's clunky, and it really doesn't help anyone to be cohesive and act quickly in a response. And then finally, we want to make sure we're testing and retesting. We're constantly putting ourselves in a position where, you know, either doing a tabletop exercise to simulate a cyber attack or simulating the communication plan, making sure the business really understands what it would look and feel like. I told Jim before this that I moved to the UK and we had never really done fire drills in the US, sorry, but in the UK in my office we did. And I really, really, as annoying as it was on a Wednesday, it did help me to really get in the mindset of what it would look and feel like, where it would go. And I think, you know, we need to do a bit more of those fire drills at a business level to really understand what this would look like so we can respond in a strong way. Jim, from your discussions with our clients, I guess, what are the most important? I know they're all really important, but what do you think really stand out to you that a business should look at when you look at these five principles?
Liz, I really like your example. There's nothing like muscle memory. You know, do actually going through these processes and the little details are important and you don't know them till you walk through. So that's a really good one. But I focus a lot on protect your assets. And the idea there is, you can't protect all of your assets. At least you can't do a good job of it. So, you know, we're obviously focusing on IT assets. Understand the most important things that your business or your organization does. Understand the IT underneath that that helps to support those. And those are the assets to focus on. So it's not everything, which can be a really big estate. It's those things that drive revenue or protect brand or really make your organization what it is.
I think that's really sound, Jim, and really helps us understand, you know, how we would recover. Because if we have everything as a really important asset, it's going to make recovering really difficult. We're going to start with the foundations and then work our way up. And that will help us to make sure we're developing the right approach to protecting those data sets as well. And so when we look at the more traditional ways that we approach data protection, you know, they don't really fit in terms of helping us from recovering from a catastrophic cyber incident, like a nation's data attack or an insider threat, like, you know, more of a TravelX or a Norsk Hydro, for examples. And the reason is a few. So we look at disaster recovery. That's really great in the event that you have one site go down due to a hurricane or some sort of site failure. It will pick up the workload and, you know, you will have high availability, and that's great. But in the event of a more catastrophic incident where everything is encrypted, if we have systems really connected, to pick up data and, you know, workloads quickly, we're spreading that malware very quickly as well. So we're doing more damage. And so disaster recovery, you know, is great for some things, but not really for cyber threat and what we're looking at. Then we look at encryption, because a lot of my clients feel really confident in what they've done because they have encryption in the business. Encryption is great from a data breach perspective because it really helps if someone steals the data, they don't know what it looks like. They can't do anything with it. But in the event of a catastrophic incident where they encrypt everything, that data can just easily be over-encrypted. So it doesn't really leave you with the ability to recover. We hear about tape a lot. It's really an old technology, but people love it because they can touch it and feel it because it's a physical tape medium. But it's really difficult to recover from quickly and test data integrity as well. So it doesn't leave you in a good position either if you're recovering your full business off of tapes. And last but not least, my favorite answer that my clients give me is, I have cyber insurance, I'm great. And, you know, I wish that was true. I think cyber insurance can be great in terms of the monetary value it provides the business and some support there, because money is always helpful, but it will not bring your data back. It is IT architecture, architected off the network in the right way that will help bring your data back. And I think really that's one thing Jim and I would like to input to everyone is that does matter. And I think, Jim, it would be good to hear from you what that looks like in terms of network isolation and an air gap design.
Yeah, when you think about it, everything on your network, on your production network, is subject to being compromised. The bad actors, all the holes that we create, all the devices, and then even the threat of an insider. So the idea is to have an extra copy of data, going back to the prior discussion on your most critical assets, have a copy of that data that's very ultra secure. So it's in a vault, and that vault has certain characteristics, physically isolated, network isolation, analytics, mutability, all these things. But the idea is, let me have a copy of data that is really safe and can't be hit. So if I get one of these bad attacks, I've got the data. And Liz, to your earlier point about test and retest, I know how to use it to bring the business back. And that's really what we do. Those are the ideas that will help ensure that your business is safe from these types of attacks.
Really valuable, Jim. And I think a few things there. One, making sure you're looking at how your data is being protected today, especially those critical assets. And if it has any of those traditional mechanisms on the left, that's great. You know, those things are still really valuable and important. But you know, looking at how we get it off the network is equally important. So air gapping the data, making sure it's an unchangeable format, as Jim said, is really important to be able to recover in the right way. And so we're seeing organizations apply these principles of resilience at different levels and in different ways. We thought we would just share with you, because that might give you some food for thought on how you can start to make this relevant for your business. Netflix is a really great example of starting to build resilience into their approach. They do something called chaos engineering, where they intentionally bring systems down to try and find bugs in their software regularly and see how the system would handle, you know, certain parts of the business not being available. And what that's helped them to do is really stay ahead of larger scale impacts. So there was a crisis back in 2015 where Amazon Web Services went down for a few days. But because Netflix had been able to test and retest using chaos engineering, they were able to recover within minutes and keep their systems available, whereas other large organizations were not. It took them a few days. So this idea of testing and retesting and kind of constantly wargaming these concepts out, whether it's at a software level or a business process level, it's hugely valuable. As you can see, it worked out well for Netflix. I think one really interesting one, Jim, is in financial services with Sheltered Harbor. Do you mind explaining that a bit?
Sheltered Harbor is a great organization. We've had the opportunity to work with them for a few years now. They're US-based, although they've had a lot of attention from a lot of organizations in the UK studying what they've been doing. And the concept for Sheltered Harbor is how to protect consumers if a bank is devastated by a cyber attack and data is lost. So it's not saving the bank, it's saving consumer confidence so that our data can be safely retrieved and used and you don't lose your bank balances and things like that. So the Sheltered Harbor process, if you will, is very similar to what we've talked about. They've identified the most important data, which is the data we have in our balances in our accounts. They protect it in a vault, like on the prior slide, very similar to that, having very secure operations. And then they have resiliency processes set up that if there was an attack, exactly what happens? How do we get the data? Where does it go? And then what services can we offer with great efficiency? And so all that planning, all that work really ties together. In an area where we don't have a lot of standards, Liz, Sheltered Harbor really stands out because they've put those standards together and they've tied them all together and made them easy for people to understand.
I think that's a big one, right? We've seen a lot of frameworks come out and a lot of guidelines, but this is in a lot of ways the most stringent financial services certification we've ever seen. So it's really cool to see some of these concepts coming through at an industry level. And I think we're probably going to see more of this, I would imagine, in healthcare and insurance, maybe retail and oil and gas and other industries as well, just working together to be able to, you know, keep services available for kind of the greater good of society.
Liz, Jim, I cannot thank you enough for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. If you want to find out more about Elizabeth and Jim, you can connect with them on LinkedIn. If you could rate the podcast and perhaps subscribe to future episodes, we'd really appreciate it. Every little helps.